Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you with us. Joining us for the broadcast, where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week, both past and present, well, and future, maybe, through the lens of original thought, the show that is unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience, and welcome to you for what looks to be shaping up to be quite an interesting week. I mean, I just saw the headline where the Israelis have created a drone that's as big as a 747, and it can reach Iran. So that's an encouraging note to begin the week on. And one of the things that's been bothering me, and it's in the news again, it seems that the Democrats who run the government, well, they seem more dedicated to the war against Toyota than the war against the Taliban. And I guess we'll just have to see how that shapes up and how that shakes out as Mr. Toyota is called in front of, well, a bunch of crooks, frankly, up at the Congress. That should make for an interesting broadcast, maybe make up for the Olympics to some degree. All right. But now let's jump into the important news of the week. And we're going to start with a story from the Times in London, Dateline Rome, Italy. A top Italian food writer has been suspended indefinitely from television for recommending stewed cat to viewers as a, quote, succulent dish. That's right, unquote. Stewed cat. Beppe Bigazzi, he's a 77-year-old Italian food writer who had a television show. He offered the recipe on his TV show, and its switchboard was immediately inundated with complaints from viewers and animal rights groups. Bigazzi said that casserole of cat was a famous dish in his home region of Valdarno in Tuscany. That's right, in Tuscany. He said, I've eaten it myself, and it's a lot better than many other animals. It's better than a chicken, it's better than a rabbit, and much, much better than a pigeon. That's according to Beppe Bigazzi. He added, mind you, I'm not a joking all that much. In the 1930s and 40s, when I was a boy, people ate a lot of cat. I'm telling you. And he's been suspended indefinitely. Carla Rocci, the head of ENPA, the Italian Society for the Protection of Animals, said that killing cats is illegal. And Francesca Martini, the deputy health minister, said it was, quote, absolutely unheard of for a public service broadcaster to tell people how delicious cats are to eat. She called for the producers to be investigated for criminal offenses involving incitement to mistreat animals. I simply find that ironic. In Italy, a member of the a government that officially dehumanizes and authorizes the murder of an entire class of its own citizens. Do you see the irony? All right. Now, let's move now to the Colorado file. I have a friend out here in town. He's been looking for a job since he retired from the intelligence service with the U.S. Navy. And he sent me an email. Now, he found a job that he was willing to take, but unfortunately, it's in South Carolina. Now, that's a bummer for everyone out here that my buddy Paul is going to be moving off to South Carolina, but it's South Carolina's gain. I'm here to tell you. Now, he sent me an email. He says, hey, Doug, here are a few job openings I found in Fort Collins, Colorado. He says, by the way, these are government jobs. First job, climate change program manager. There are three openings in Fort Collins with a starting salary of $103,000 a year. Climate change program manager. Paul apparently declined to even interview for that job. Second, climate change specialist. Two openings. Starting salary, $87,000 a year. He says, hey, Doug, are you interested in a career change? Well, I don't know, Paul. A climate change program manager, climate change specialist. I think there would be a minimum requirement of at least a BS degree, if you know what I mean. All right. So we shall not be applying to those positions anytime in the near future. But for those of you in the audience who are interested, perhaps, in, just bellying up to the government trough there in Fort Collins, I don't know. Send me an email. Maybe I can get Paul to send you the link. And you, if you have that BS degree, you could have a future. All right. From San Diego, California, America's finest city, University of California at San Diego administrators are condemning a weekend ghetto-themed party thrown by fraternity students to mock Black History Month. But administrators say they're not likely to discipline anyone. Now, they're not likely to discipline anyone for anything in the modern university system, except maybe for questioning global warming. But this was a party, the so-called Compton Cookout. It was an event. Now, I hate to laugh at this, but the event urged all participants to wear chains, don cheap clothes, and speak very loudly. The invitation read, "For those of you who are unfamiliar with ghetto chicks usually have gold teeth, start fights, and wear cheap clothes. For guys, I expect all males to be rocking jerseys, stunting up your white tees, triple XL smallest size acceptable. Anything FUBU, Echo, Rockaway, high-low top Jordans or Dunks, chains, jorts, stunner shades, 5950 hats, tats, etc." That was on the invitation by these fun-loving college kids out at UC San Diego in California. And, you know, I think that this is simply a symptom of the college students' natural pushback to the incredible amount of political correctness that they're forced to swallow, a Black History Month not being an exception. But anyway, I wouldn't have gone to the party myself, and the University of San Diego administrators tell us this was thrown off campus, so we're not going to punish anyone, at least not openly. The event was linked to Pi Kappa Alpha, just in case you have any kids attending UC San Diego. You might want to look into their affiliations there with said fraternity. All right. Now let's move into more serious news as we move into a serious week. Cleveland has been deemed the most miserable city in America by Forbes.com. Yes, Dateline New York from the Reuters wire. Cleveland has won the dubious distinction of being the most miserable city in the United States. According to the Forbes.com poll, the Ohio City on the Cuyahoga River has high unemployment, dismal weather, hefty taxes, corruption, mediocre sports teams, high crime rates, all of which have propelled it to the number one position on the Forbes.com list. The city has been dubbed with the endearing nickname, "The Mistake by the Lake." Poor Cleveland, they can't get any respect. The Mistake by the Lake. That's the only reason I put the story in there. I thought that was kind of cute. And I'd never heard that before about our dearly beloved sister city of Cleveland, home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe it's a place where a river actually caught on fire one time. Now that's, I'm serious. Smoke on the water and all that. Yeah. Now that's a dubious distinction. Now let's move on to the political situation in the formerly Empire State of New York. Governor Patterson, New York Governor Patterson, just announcing his name elicits chuckles from here within the studio. New York Governor Patterson's ratings are in the cellar. Polls show a fellow Democrat would swamp him in a primary, and lately he's had to deny unsubstantiated whispers about his personal life. Now, he returned to his childhood home last Saturday, and that home being, where was that home of his? He's an alumni of the class of 71. He's the first legally blind person to hold office and returned to his hometown there to kick off his campaign. He said last Saturday he announced plans to seek a full 4-year term And he's become known as the accidental governor. I mean, that's worse than Cleveland. Maybe he should move to Cleveland and I don't know, run for county clerk or something. Maybe he could get a position handing out parking tickets. But, yeah, no quotes from Mr. Patterson, unfortunately, because I love to do my Patterson voice. But there were no quotes. I am not the accidental governor. What do you think I'm from? New Jersey? All right, now I'm ripping off Saturday Night Live. That's pretty cheap. Okay, let's move. Now, we do have serious news, folks, and I'm not kidding around, okay? Let's talk about the United States Marine Corps. God bless the United States Marine Corps. Dateline Marjah, Afghanistan, from the Reuters wire. U.S. Marines are leading one of NATO's biggest offensives against Taliban Islamic militants in Afghanistan, and they're facing fierce resistance in some areas. The Marines are in Marjah, the last militant stronghold in the country's most violent province of Helmand. The campaign is expected to drag on for weeks. The assault, now, according to the Reuters report, is one of the biggest of the eight-year war and is the first test of U.S. President Barry Ho's plan to send 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan, where the Taliban has apparently made a steady comeback since a U.S.-led invasion. You'll remember that when we threw the Taliban out back there in 2001. So pray for the United States Marine Corps. Pray that that goes well. It's got to be ugly over there for those fellows. But some good news from the Daily Mail over in London. The Taliban's top military commander has been arrested. Arrested? What? Arrested in a joint CIA-Pakistani operation in Pakistan. Okay, well, so he's been arrested. Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, the number two behind There's so many vowels, it's hard to pronounce some of these things. He's the number two behind Afghan Taliban founder Mullah Muhammad Obar, and he's a close associate of the ever-popular Osama bin Laden. He was captured in the southern Pakistani port city of Karachi. Yeah, now, according to the Daily Mail, the arrest represents a major victory. And folks, that's because the folks at the Daily Mail don't really understand how to win a war. But after all, they're just a bunch of British journalism students, for crying out loud. Hopefully, Mr. What was his name here? Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar. Hopefully he was arrested and tortured. Or let's just say aggressively interrogated. Don't want to be politically incorrect. Aggressively interrogated. And whatever information we could get from him was gotten, and then he was summarily shot in the back of the head in a concrete room. I guess we'll find out what happened to Mr. Baradar over there. All right, now, from the war file, as we go deeper, the Transportation Security Administration is here. They're with the government. They're here to help. A 53-year-old police officer from Camden, Ohio, was flying to Orlando in March with his wife and their son, Ryan. Now, the boy is handicapped, okay? His ankles are malformed, and his legs have low muscle tone. He wears leg braces in order to stand up. Now, as his mother walked young Ryan, who, by the way, Ryan is 4 years old. As his mother walked young Ryan through the metal detector, the alarm went off, as you can well imagine, wearing steel braces on your legs. Well, the screener... said that the boy's braces had to come off. And so the mother and father, they told the screener he can't walk without them on his own. And the screener said, well, he'll need to take them off. Now, Ryan's mother then offered to walk young Ryan through the detector, and the screener said no, the boy had to walk on his own. Oh. And the couple complied, and somehow Ryan, a four-year-old disabled boy, managed to walk through the metal detector. He made it through. Yeah. Anyway, there's your report from the front and how the TSA is protecting you and I. It's just, well, what more need be said about that story, right? Let's move on. Let's talk about the Mossad. From Dubai, the Reuters wire, New evidence incriminating Israel's spy agency, the Mossad, in the assassination of a Hamas commander in Dubai includes credit card payments and phone calls made by suspects. They've got them on videotape. They've got them crawling all over Dubai, the hit team that took out one Mahmoud al-Mabouhou. This Palestinian gentleman was found dead in his luxury hotel room in Dubai on January 20th, a day after arriving there. Didn't even have a chance to enjoy much of that luxury hotel. So what bothered, there's a couple things about this story, okay? First of all, I can't tell if Mossad is just getting lazy and sloppy, or if perhaps they want Palestinians like Mahmoud al-Mabahou to know that if you do certain things, we're going to hunt you down and kill you wherever you go. And we're going to do this publicly as a warning to other Mahmouds out there. I don't know which is where. Maybe they were sending a message to Palestinian terrorists. Maybe they're just getting sloppy and they were lazy on this one. Seems like it's fairly embarrassing for the Mossad there. But what really annoys me, in all the reports that I've seen and read, only one has reported what this gentleman, Mr. Mahmoud al-Mabou, what he actually did. And he coordinated the kidnapping and murder of two Israeli soldiers. That's right. And so to Mossad, we raise a glass, and we're thankful that you hunted down Mr. al-Mabou and took him out in that luxury hotel room. And I hope that the other terrorists get the message. Welcome music for Mahmoud al-Mabou as he enters the smoky netherworld. All right. We're just rolling along here, having a good time. Welcoming Mahmoud to hell there. What's that? What do we have here from Parade Magazine? Elton John on the cover. This has just been handed to me, hot off the presses. My goodness. What is it that he's wearing pink glasses and how many? He's wearing one earring, Elton is. He got his hair moosed up there. Now, he's wearing the earring in the right ear. I can't remember. Back in high school, some boys got their ears pierced, and they were very careful about which ear to pierce. Yeah, because one meant that you were really cool, and one meant that you were, of the Elton John ilk. And so we were all very careful about that, those who took part in that foolish activity. Let's see here. He talks about Jesus. Interesting. Elton John talking about Jesus. Says Jesus was a gay man. Interesting. Oh, should I be shocked? And then they show a picture of Elton John as a little boy playing the piano. My, it's touching. It just shows you what... No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used that term. I apologize. So Elton John, according to Elton John's reading of the scriptures, Jesus was a compassionate gay man. That'll be an interesting conversation to see between Elton and Jesus Christ, the creator and judge of all the world. When Elton asserts that Jesus is a compassionate gay man, and, well, I guess we'll have to wait to see Jesus' response, Elton. But he does look fabulous. Fabulous on that cover of Parade magazine. Why is it that homosexuals love the word fabulous so much?
I don't know.
I think it's because of the S at the end. They can drag it out. He's fabulous. just wonderful. All right. Anyway, that was my off-the-cuff take on the Elton John theology. Okay, and we'll have to see how that works out for Elton. All right, now back to the war. I was interrupted by Elton.
Sorry.
Back to the war from Marjan, Afghanistan. As recently discussed, the Marjan operation is underway. The United States Marine Corps is routing and killing terrorists, disarming and blowing up IEDs, and then killing some more terrorists. And then they stop for breakfast. God bless the United States Marine Corps. But listen to this. Once the town is secure there in Marjan, the Marjan operation is a major test of a new NATO strategy. Now, I told you earlier about the new NATO strategy, inserting 30,000 Marines to go in and rout and kill terrorists, which sounds like a pretty good strategy from where I'm sitting. But the new NATO strategy stresses protecting civilians over routing insurgents as quickly as possible. So now we see why this thing is dragging on and expected to drag on for several weeks, because there's a new policy: protect civilians before routing the insurgents. And I know that we've seen reports that the Taliban there in Afghanistan are using civilians as, quote, civilian shields, right? Supposedly innocent people to shield them from the wrath of the United States Marine Corps. And obviously, I've never been to Afghanistan. I'm not sure if the citizens there are terrorized by the Taliban into allowing the Taliban to function amongst them, if they're being held hostage to some degree, or if they are sympathizers with the Taliban. And we know that the Taliban has plenty of sympathizers in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. So I don't know which it is. But this strategy of protecting civilians over and above killing the insurgents, the terrorists, the Taliban, to me, is an unworkable policy. And it's going to get a lot of Marines killed. It's going to get a lot of civilians killed. If the civilians are so scared of the Taliban that they allow them to operate there, then the civilians need to be rescued. Or perhaps the civilians need to fear the United States Marines more than they do the Taliban, at least for the time being, during the Battle of Marjan. What else do we have from the... Yeah, and when you go in and rescue people who are kidnapped, the goal is to kill the kidnappers and make sure the kidnapping ends unsuccessfully for the kidnappers. This is a war, ladies and gentlemen. You don't put the lives of civilians who quite possibly have been harboring these terrorists over the importance of eliminating the terrorists. And that's just my humble military opinion, and I'm just an amateur, sitting here in my comfortable suburban home talking about what the Marines are doing in Afghanistan. Send up a prayer for the United States Marines there early and often this week. Now, once the town of Marjan is secure, according to the AP here, NATO plans to rush in a civilian Afghan administration, restore public services, and pour in aid to try to win the loyalty of the population and prevent the Taliban from returning. Yeah, well, good luck on that. By the way, the troops are all scheduled to pull out. When is it? September? I forget. They're all scheduled to pull out. So the Taliban, how much welfare do you plan to pass around there, and for how long? Anyway, kind of depressing to see my fellow Marines have to go in under policies such as these. It's just disturbing. All right. From CBN News, this surprised me. Hadn't heard anything about this during the week. CBN has learned exclusively that 5 Muslim soldiers at Fort Jackson in the aforementioned South Carolina were arrested just before Christmas. The 5 were part of the Arabic translation program on the base. The men are suspected of trying to poison the food supply of the soldiers there at Fort Jackson. And it's suspected that these 5 Arabic translators may have been in contact with the group of 5 Washington, D.C. area Muslims that traveled to Pakistan to wage jihad back in November. That they were arrested, you remember, by Pakistani authorities just before Christmas. Well, we'll have to see what happens there. After Fort Hood, anything's a possibility, right? But it doesn't look like terrorism. No, no, it doesn't look like it's anything to worry about. Just go on about your daily business, on about your affairs, and pay no attention to the man on fire over there, or the poison in the soldier's food. All right. More from the war file. This is from WorldNet Daily. A child preacher on the Egyptian Al-Rama television station has praised martyrdom for children, citing the story of a young boy who sought to be killed in battle after saying, quote, "My mother has presented me as a gift to Allah this year." The child preacher, identified as Abd al-Fattah Marwan, appears to be of elementary school age. Yeah. He says, "We meet today to talk about the love of martyrdom for the sake of Allah. Yes, the love of martyrdom for the sake of Allah. Dearly beloved, Allah said, Allah has bought from the believers their lives, their property, because they shall have paradise. They shall fight for the sake of Allah. They shall slay and be slain." Oh, what are those cookies over? May I have a cookie, please? Oh, no? Keep on preaching jihad? Okay, I will keep preaching. May I have a cookie after I preach jihad? Oh, very good. I will get a cookie. Mighty Allah, we are your warriors. We will slay and be slain. Poor kid. Brainwashed little Muslim kid. It's just sad. It's just sad. And ladies and gentlemen, that's why this will be a long war. All right, now let's move from the psychotics in the Muslim world to North Korea, speaking of psychotics, from the Asia, the French press agency there, a dateline of Seoul, Kim Hyung-hyu, who is Kim Dong-il's sister, was newly added to a diagram of North Korea's power structure released by South Koreans after she has returned to the public spotlight for the first time in nearly 6 years. She's apparently heading an organ which oversees light industries under the ruling Workers' Party of Korea. Kim Dong-il's sister has frequently accompanied Il on field inspections there in the light industry sector. Il has increasingly relied on his family, according to the French press agency, after he reportedly suffered a stroke back in 2008. The sister's comeback paves the way for a family power succession. Yeah. The dear leader is apparently grooming his youngest son, Jong-un, to take over for him. Kim Dong-il, by the way, has three sons from two marriages, and who knows how many from Scandinavian prostitutes. Of course, that's all just alleged. It's all just alleged. Let's see what else. Jong-un, the second son of Kim Dong-il's third wife, Ko Young-hee, he's the one they're grooming. No adult photo of him is available. He was allegedly born in 1983. A former personal chef to Dong-il has described the young son, the lad, Jong-un, as a chip off the old block who closely resembles his father physically and in terms of his personality. So we're in for a long one in the Korean Peninsula as well, it would seem. And that's nothing to it's nothing to laugh about, frankly. All right, now let's move into the science file. This headline, another one of these misleading headlines. Scientists discover the secret of aging. This is from the Financial Times over in London. One of the biggest puzzles in biology, how and why living cells age, has been solved by an international team based at the Newcastle University in England. Okay, so that has been solved. I think that's a bit of an overstatement, you know? I mean, hello, Phil Jones over at the IPCC, the king of overstatement, who said the sky was falling and the world was warming, the sea levels were rising and the Himalayas were melting. And now some scientists here in Newcastle University, or is it Nuxal? You know how they do, you know, is it Nuxal in England or is it Newcastle? Anyway, they say that the puzzle has been solved. And then if you read down into the article, the research published by the journal Molecular Systems Biology shows that when an aging cell detects serious damage to its DNA caused by the wear and tear of life, it sends out specific internal signals. These distress signals trigger the cell's mitochondria, its tiny energy-producing power packs, to make oxidizing free radical molecules, which in turn tell the cell either to destroy itself or stop dividing. The aim of this activity is to avoid the damaged DNA that causes cancer. Now, that's pretty darn interesting. Cells stop dividing in order to prevent damaged DNA from causing an uncontrolled cancerous growth. Wow. To me, this is evidence for the curse of sin that's talked about in Genesis. We're figuring out why it is we die, why it is we age. It's because, just like the Bible said, that now that man knows good and evil, we have to throw him out of the garden, lest he eat from the tree of life and live forever. And sin would be an eternal cancer upon the face of all that exists. Anyway, I'm going to run this by my pastor to try to get a deeper take on this story, but this is really cool. Tom Kirkwood, director of Nuxil's Institute of Aging and Health, he said that our breakthrough means that we stand a very much better chance of making a successful attack on age-related diseases while at the same time avoiding the risk of unwanted side effects like cancer. His colleague, Tom Zglinski, said it is absolutely essential to tread carefully in trying to alter processes that cause cells to age, because the last thing we want is to help age-damaged cells from breaking out to become malignant. So you could say that the puzzle has been identified, I think. Some of the pieces have been identified. But as far as solved, I think the folks over at the Financial Times might want to fire whatever journalism student wrote the headline, because the puzzle is far from solved. Not unlike, you know, what we heard about stem cells and how they were supposed to make Superman walk in 6 months if only we elected Al Gore. You remember all that, how stem cells were supposed to change the world? There is yet to be a single breakthrough in stem cell, fetal harvested stem cell research. In fact, I've got a story on that. If you want to get into the really creepy and insane, there's an institute that we can't trust. It's called the Institute of Stem Cell Biology and Regenerative Medicine. This is an institution that harvests the cells of innocent people that they've murdered, and then they use those cells to conduct Nazi-esque experiments to try to make old geezers' livers repair themselves after years of touring with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Okay, it's just disgusting. But anyway, a spokesman for the Institute of Stem Cell Biology and Regenerative Medicine, allegedly, he says that clinics in many countries that allow parents to deposit stem cells from their neonatal baby's umbilical cord, he says that they're phonies and frauds. He says umbilical cords contain blood-forming stem cells at a level that would maintain the blood-forming capacity of a very young child, and he alleges that it won't do any good for serious diseases later in life. And my question to this person is, first of all, how can I trust you? You work for an institution that grows and kills human beings and harvests their body parts for experiments. And second, could you please point out to me what your gruesome work has produced? I mean, here you are assaulting the institutions they don't kill anyone. They just save umbilical cord blood for stem cells. And you say that's a fraud. Well, what about you, sir, after you've murdered countless thousands of innocent people and harvested their body parts? What has your research produced? Can you show me the breakthrough that you have produced? You allege that these people are ripping off parents for tens of thousands of dollars to store the cord blood. And I really don't know the science behind all that, but I know they haven't killed anyone. And there's simply no comparison between their crime and your crime, sir, in my opinion. The International Stem Cell Society is due to issue a report in April about unproven stem cell therapies such as banking babies' umbilical cord blood for future use. So the International Stem Cell Society, which also participates in the dehumanization, murder, and then experimentation upon the bodies of the smallest, most vulnerable people in our society, they're going to issue a report claiming that some people are being ripped off and misled about cord blood. But at least there's no blood on their hands. They're just thieves. You people are murderers. Thank you. the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And we carry over from one tragic story to another. From the Montreal Gazette, euthanasia is on the march in Canada. The president of the Federation of Quebec Medical Specialists told a National Assembly committee that doctors know when death is imminent and inevitable. That's he said that's Gaetan Barrette. He says that doctors know when death is imminent. And they want to legalize doctor-physician-assisted suicide there in Quebec. The chairman of the committee, the aforementioned Quebec medical specialist, explained that ministers of the National Assembly will hear about 30 expert witnesses on dying with dignity a little later this month to prepare a paper for a traveling public consultation this fall. They're gonna go around and try to sell this to the Canadian citizens there in Quebec. Barrette told the committee the issue of euthanasia could not even be discussed in Quebec 50 years ago, comparing it with the evolution in thinking on abortion. That's right. Now we can talk about it. Not only can we talk about it, but we allow it and promote it as good. And that's what the Quebecers are up to with the euthanasia issue. He says doctors are ready to debate euthanasia, and like abortion, he said, limits must be established. Not every patient will want euthanasia, and not all doctors will perform the procedure. So, not unlike abortion, if we're going to dehumanize and murder an entire class of citizens, let's establish some limits and make sure it's done in a very civic-minded and orderly fashion. You know, like it was done at Auschwitz. Very orderly. Civic records will be kept. Limits will be established. Barrette explained that a patient who is lucid consults his doctor, family, and friends before requesting euthanasia. For patients who are not lucid, a biological will can guide relatives who must decide. The choice of the patient is his choice, he said. We want legislation in tune with the wishes of the public. Polls indicate, by the way, according to the Montreal Gazette, that a high percentage of Quebecers favor euthanasia, including doctors. Yves Robert, secretary of the college, the Quebec College of Physicians, told the committee that Quebec is the only jurisdiction in Canada where patients can refuse medical treatment, which can lead to death. He says it doesn't exist elsewhere in Canada. We are ahead. Can we go further? And I say to Quebec, yes, you can go further. Down the slippery slope toward the rim of hell as you enter into the next great age of godless medicine. And it's certainly scary for the sick, the elderly, the unloved, the unwanted, and the inconvenient across our great neighbor to the north, Canada. And that is why I am a supporter of the personhood movement, because it is only full personhood in the eyes of the law that protects not only the smallest, the youngest, the most innocent, and the most defenseless among us, but also the older, the unloved, the unwanted, the inconvenient, protects all people with the rights of full personhood in the eyes of the law. And speaking of personhood, we have an article from the Colorado Independent. The author, Joseph Boven, he says, a growing spectrum of personhood initiative opponents say the law would alter more than 2,000 Colorado statutes, that it would end in vitro fertilization and stem cell research, and that it would severely limit the rights of pregnant women. So let's take on his assertions. First of all, it would end in vitro fertilization. No. It would simply end the discarding and killing of persons who happen to be in a petri dish. Wouldn't end in vitro fertilization. It would simply alter the way it is practiced. It would end stem cell research, he says. Yes. Any stem cells that are harvested from innocent persons who've been killed, that would be illegal. Yes. He says that it would severely limit the rights of pregnant women. Now, how severely would you feel your rights were limited if the government came to you and said you cannot murder an innocent baby? Does that infringe on your rights? Do you feel infringed upon when someone tells you you cannot kill and dismember and then sell the body parts of an innocent baby? That doesn't really infringe on my rights at all. doesn't bother me in the least. And how about a mother to tell her that you can't murder, dismember, and then sell the body parts of your own innocent little baby? Should a mother feel her rights have been infringed? Is that how far we have come in this brave new world? Let's see here. More from the, what's the name of this magazine? The Colorado Independent. We have a quote here from Jacinta Montoya Price, the representative of Protect Families, Protect Choices Coalition. Yes, yes, yes. Protect Families, Protect Choices. She says, Coloradans have said they don't want the government interfering in their private decisions to murder other people. We will continue to work against the extremists who think that their scientific dogma should be entered into our state constitution. Now, I added a couple things there. She says that these private decisions, she doesn't acknowledge that those are private decisions to murder other people. I added that editorially. And she says that we, who assert the rights of all human beings as persons equally in the eyes of the law, all innocent persons, every single one, without exception, she says, we are extremists who think that our religious dogma should be entered into the state constitution, and I replace the word religious with scientific, because it is purely scientifically provable that a baby, whether it's 2 cells or 2 billion cells, has uniquely identifiable human DNA, and it is a person. And it should be protected not only by love, of course we would want all children and old people who are sick to be protected by love, but to be protected by law and with the force of the state. And if that's extreme, then I am an extremist. Now, as were our founding fathers, the authors of the Holy Scripture, and the founders of civilized behavior throughout the world. Let's see, Dr. Savita Ginde, medical director for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains, said that the initiative would, quote, insert a non-medical, non-scientific definition into the state constitution, and so will have far-reaching consequences on important life decisions that go far beyond the issue of abortion. Isn't it interesting how they call killing babies a life issue? I mean, it's completely Orwellian. That's the only way to describe it. A life issue. A life decision. Please. Let's see. Reverend Dr. Phil Campbell. You always want to be suspicious when someone's name is preceded by Reverend Doctor. Yeah. Dr. Phil, he's a board member of the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado and director of ministry studies at the Iliff School of Theology. He's got to be on our side, right? You'd think he's a Christian. He says the personhood amendment would threaten religious freedom in Colorado and take away a woman's right to make decisions about killing her baby. I'm sorry, about her own health care, with her doctor, her family, and her God. That's Iliff School of Theology. If you are thinking about attending or sending any of your children to a school of theology, please scratch Iliff off your list. Let's see. Now, Republican Senators Dave Schultheis, Scott Renfro, Kevin Lundberg, and State Representatives B.J. Nickel and Amy Stevens were joined by Republican 4th District Congressional candidates Tom Lucero and Cory Gardner in signing the personhood petition. So here in this article, just if you're keeping score, they quote 3 people against, 2 of whom are paid by or directly or indirectly by the abortion industry, 3 against, and the article cites 7 in support of the personhood amendment. Yeah. One more supporter, quote in the article, Doug McBurney, conservative talk show host and one of the directors of Colorado Right to Life. That's not true. I'm not a director. I'm just a volunteer. Anyway, Doug McBurney told the Colorado Independent that, in effect, it didn't matter what the public wanted for now, that this was a moral issue. Quoting Doug McBurney, we are here to stand against the most diabolical crime ever committed against mankind, legalized abortion. All of the wars and atrocities in all of human history added together don't equal the death count of legalized abortion worldwide. This is the greatest drive for human rights in the history of the world, said McBurney. In fact, he said, supporters of the initiative were fighting not man's cause, but God's cause. He said they were not afraid to speak the gospel of Jesus Christ, unquote. And I appreciate the author. I appreciate the author citing 3 against and 8 for, and including my quote about Jesus Christ. I always appreciate accuracy in reporting. And one more from the, well, we want to go to the justice file, or should we take a break?
Go ahead?
Okay. We might go a little bit long because I've got a lot of news. I hate to do that to you. Good news from the justice file. Florida has executed 45-year-old Martin Edward Grossman. He was convicted of first-degree murder in the death of Margaret Peggy Park, a Florida wildlife officer who was shot and killed in 1984. Grossman was only the 69th person executed in Florida since the death penalty was reinstated there in 1979. More from the justice file. San Antonio, Texas, from the Associated Press. The mother of two babies whose bodies were found stuffed under a Texas house in 2007 has been sentenced to life. Valerie Lopez pleaded guilty to capital murder back in 2008. The sentence was part of a plea deal in which Lopez agreed to help prosecutors in their case of her ex-boyfriend, Jerry. The couple shared the home where the bodies of the 4-month-old Sebastian and 14-month-old Soraya were found in March of 2007. So did you catch this? She got a plea deal to get life so she could help prosecutors go after her ex-boyfriend. Well, the ex-boyfriend reached a separate plea agreement back in December, and he's also received life. The two children found under the house wrapped in plastic, they did not receive life from the state of Texas. And now, so that's the justice file. Here's what the justice system produces. Here's the fruit of the justice system from Philadelphia. Investigators say a massive snowball fight outside City Hall between about 100 teenagers spilled into a department store. Approximately 100 teens engaged in a gigantic snowball fight outside City Hall. Shortly afterwards, the unruly mob rolled into a Macy's department store. Customers there witnessed total chaos. People started throwing shoes at each other. Someone threw a sign, and a 16-year-old girl was arrested for kicking a 15-year-old boy in the face as other teenagers held him down. And you remember they criticized the cop, I believe it was in D.C., who pulled his gun on the alleged children having a snowball fight. You remember that? I took the cop's side then, and I take the cop's side here now in Philadelphia. But we're producing a generation of lawlessness because there is no justice. Dateline Thornton, Colorado. Police say a 16-year-old boy, wow. They say a house party spilled into the street. Okay, now, when I was in high school, when a house party spilled into the street, that means somebody went outside to throw up. That's what that meant back 20 years ago, 25 years ago. But now, when a house party spills into the street, a teenager was then struck by a car, and then the people in the car got out of the car and beat the boy to death. That's in Thornton, Colorado, a lovely little suburb here in the Denver metro area. A generation of lawlessness. Dateline Phoenix, a father accused of running down and killing his daughter in an honor killing, will not face the death penalty. Maricopa County prosecutors announced the decision for life last Thursday in the case against 48-year-old Fela al-Maliki. The Iraqi immigrant is accused of killing his daughter by using his Jeep to run her down, along with another woman, because she had become, quote, too westernized. And so he killed her. Fela al-Maliki is charged with first-degree murder, aggravated assault, and 2 counts of leaving the scene of a serious accident, just in case they can't get the other 2 charges to stick. But they've already decided not to pursue the death penalty, and I cannot comprehend why, except that there is no justice. Dateline Brunswick, Georgia. Authorities say a Georgia woman drowned her daughter, tried to drown her son, and then fatally shot herself in the chest. Julia Murray called 911 last Tuesday morning to say she had drowned her 2 children and asked for an ambulance. She then shot herself while on the phone with the 911 dispatcher. Murray's 2-year-old son, Creighton, survived the attack and was in stable condition at last report. The hearts of the mothers have been turned against their children because there is no justice. And that lack of justice has produced a generation of lawlessness. Dateline Sarahville, New Jersey. State police have scaled back a search for a three-month-old girl believed to have been thrown off a bridge into a New Jersey river by her father. 21-year-old Shamsid Din Abdurrahim of Galloway, New Jersey, told the police he threw his daughter Zara off a Garden State Parkway bridge last Tuesday. Abdurrahim has pleaded not guilty to charges, including the attempted murder of the child's maternal grandmother. He assaulted her during the abduction of the child. He says the child was thrown into the river. The child has not been found. Dateline Suwanee, Georgia. Police in Georgia say a man stabbed his estranged wife to death in a Walmart parking lot where they met to exchange custody of their two children. Philip Chad Dunn stabbed his wife during the argument, then stabbed himself. Shelley, the wife, died of her wounds at a hospital. Their children were present during the attack. Philip Dunn is expected to survive. No word on when the district attorney will forsake the death penalty in this case. But that news is surely about to come. All right, I don't want to do the story about the psychotic woman who shot the people. Do I want to do this? No, I don't. It's too much. You can only take so much. Let's move to the politics file. Something that's a little less demonic and dark and wicked and evil, like our justice system and the fruit that it produces. Let's move into the politics file. Dateline Washington. President Barack Barry Ho Obama is expected to publish his health care plan as early as Monday, combining features of the two bills passed by the crooks in Washington. And those agreements are likely to be combined as a privileged budget reconciliation bill. Did you catch that? A privileged budget reconciliation bill, which only needs a 51-vote majority to pass. That's right. A high-powered, a senior congressional Democratic aide says the reconciliation path is the path we are going to take. So I told you back before Thanksgiving that the fix was in on health care. Well, the fix is in. Well, although it may be more appropriate to say that the break is in. Sometimes my extremely attractive audio engineer plays some songs just to lift my spirits. And so that's what that's all about. Oh, Barry Ho's a star? Okay. All right. But that did lift my spirits after that rather depressing spate of justice and domestic tranquility news. And of course, now to see that the prediction I hoped would be wrong turns out to be correct, that the fix is in to further socialize health care. All right, now, some more disturbing news on the political front. Thomas Honig, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, said that rising debt was infringing on the central bank's ability to fulfill its goals of maintaining price stability and long-term economic growth. He said stunning deficit projections were putting political pressure on the Fed to keep interest rates low, infringing on its independence at the risk of inflation. He says without preemptive action, the U.S. risks its next crisis. So this is the other prediction I made that I hope was wrong. was that 2007 through 2009 are merely a preview of what is to come as far as economic crisis and collapse. And now that prediction is being, well, we're at least being warned about it by one of the presidents of the Fed there in Kansas City. He said the worst option for the U.S. was a scenario where the government knocks on the central bank's door and asks us to print more money. Instead, the administration must find ways to cut spending and generate revenue. What are the odds of that? That doesn't make me very comfortable about my rather uncomfortable prediction. He says Barack Obama, he reminds us that Barack Obama recently lifted the government's borrowing authority to $14.3 trillion. And that's just what that's what they're telling us about in the shell game. That's not the 50-some trillion dollars in unfunded liabilities that we're going to encounter as we move through the next generation with Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and other entitlements, the rich and fat retirement packages that these parasites in the government and the unions have set up for themselves. I'm telling you, it's scary stuff. And unfortunately, finances is based on math, and you can't finesse math, Barry. Someone has to pay the bill eventually. The Federal Reserve, by the way, is purchasing $1.2 trillion in mortgage-backed securities. And they're doing that through the month of March this year. They're purchasing mortgage-backed securities. Do you remember what those were called? Those were called toxic assets. So the Fed, the bedrock institution, allegedly, of our financial system, is the only institution that's buying mortgage-backed securities. Now, that's just scary. I'm sorry. All right, so we'll see what happens. We certainly will. Lord willing, we'll all get to see what happens. But it doesn't look comfortable. All right, now let's move across the pond to our good friends over in London from the Reuters Wire. The Labour Party is taking a page from President Barry Ho's campaign book by contacting voters directly and encouraging word-of-mouth campaigning. Yeah. The Labour Party's campaign coordinator, he said, quote, "Obama better understood community organization and peer-to-peer communications than any recent candidate, and we are applying that lesson. Our new election slogan, a future fair for all." Yes, fair. Not necessarily good. Not necessarily great by any stretch of the imagination, but at least we're going to try for fair to middling, one might say. Well, that's the best we can hope for, wouldn't you say, mate? After all, Great Britannia is no more. That's Labour Party over there in the formerly Great Britain. Now let's move on. Some more interesting political news. Interesting, distressing, disturbing. President Barry Ho says Social Security is slowly running out of money. Wow. Put up an alarm bell. Barry, wow, that's why he's the president. He's so smart. I mean, he's really ahead of the curve on that one. He says that Social Security can exist well into the future with a slight fix. Yeah. Now, the system, he said, he reminded us, is funded with a tax on earnings up to $109,000 a year. That's right. For those of you who've never made over $109,000 a year, you may not know that you are not taxed. You don't have to pay Social Security on money that you make over $109,000. You only have to pay Social Security on the first $109,000 you make. The rest of it's free and clear, as far as Social Security is concerned. But, of course, they jack up the income tax so that they get their money. But anyway, Obama says lifting the cap to tax a larger share of income would be one way to extend the Social Security system. So now he wants to tax every penny, and believe me, he wants every penny, of people who make $125,000, $300,000 a year. And if you think these are rich people, these are typically small business owners. These aren't rich people who inherited mommy and daddy's money. These are people running a small business upon whom dozens, maybe hundreds of people depend for their income. And Barry Ho wants to take more of their money, which means they'll have to lay off more of their workers. Barry Ho says, without an adjustment, Social Security will start to run out of money in about 20 years. Now, Barry, Now, come here, man. You went to an Ivy League school, am I right? Could you please define the term start to run out of money? Could you help me with that? I mean, you either run out of money or you have money. Now, you say Social Security is going to start to run out of money in about 20 years. Could you explain what you mean by that, Barry? And by the way, might I remind you that Social Security doesn't have any money. They're borrowing all of it. Barry and the Democrats and the Republican liberals, progressive socialists, have spent all the money. It's all gone. There is no money. We're not starting to run out of money, Barry. We don't have any money. Okay. Anyway, those of you who were thinking about attending or sending your children to an Ivy League school, please scratch them all off your list. All right. One more from the political file. Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton is back in the news. That's right. He's back in action after his heart surgery. Just days after undergoing a procedure to unclog a blocked artery, Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton is talking about childhood obesity, which can lead to early heart disease, diabetes, and other health problems. Clinton gave an update Wednesday afternoon about the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. Does anyone else see the irony in Bill Clinton giving anyone advice on a healthier generation? This is the president who introduced an entire generation of teenage girls a new and interesting way to defile their bodies with their teenage boyfriends, and he told them that it wasn't sex. And he's going to advise us on a healthier generation. I mean, the cheeseburgers aside, the heart surgery aside, that irony I can live with, we'll all have to live with something like that. But indeed, Mr. Clinton, how dare you advise anyone on a healthier generation? It's just ridiculous. All right, let's see here. Dateline Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. Oklahoma City bombing conspirator Terry Nichols says he's going on a hunger strike because prison officials don't provide him with a fiber-rich diet. I'm not making this up. He began his hunger strike last Monday because he says his body is being defiled. And not by Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, but by the food that he gets at the Supermax prison out in beautiful Florence, Colorado. He says the lack of whole grains and fresh food in his diet harms his health and violates his religious beliefs, causing him to sin against God. Terry Nichols, okay? So he must be a liberal at heart, because isn't it the liberals who carry out the most diabolically evil and wicked crimes, but they're very careful about what they eat, right? They're not so careful about what they smoke or what they let their kids smoke or what they put in their mouths generally. But boy, when it comes to their diet, don't make them sin against Gaia. I don't know what they're feeding him. Are they feeding him? Yeah, I wonder if they're feeding him the casserole of cat. Beppe Bagazzi might could advise the Supermax on some new diet plans. I don't know if he'd be... Anyway, Terry Nichols, by the way, killed 192 people. A bunch of children. He blew up a building with Timothy McVeigh. Yet he's still breathing and complaining about his food. But the news is not all bad for cats. From Sydney, Australia, the Reuters Wire. Scientists said that putting cat food close to ponds inhabited by baby cane toads attracts carnivorous ants. The ants attack and kill the baby toads and eat them. Now, why would you think scientists want to kill cane toads? Well, cane toads are Australia's top major pest, and environmentalists have tried for years to stop from killing off the native wildlife. So these cane toads were introduced from Hawaii in 1935 into Australia in a bid to control native cane beetles. Well, that introduction has led to dramatic declines in population of native snakes, goanna lizards, and quolls, which are a cat-sized marsupial, interestingly enough. So cat food attracts the ants that can kill the toads. So who's to say that cats are all bad? And that's a nice friendly note to end the show on. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with me. I want to thank KGOV Radio, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, Personhood Colorado, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.